Welcome to the download edition of World Business Report, the Wall Street Update, on Friday, the 19th of August, with Fergus Nicol. The price of crude oil has jumped above $51 a barrel during trading in London. Optimism stems apparently from an imminent OPEC meeting where a production freeze is possibly on the cards. Oil trading has been busy and consistently upwards in the US too, as we've been hearing from Chris Lowe of FTN Financial in New York.
We have seen oil trade higher in 11 of the last 13 sessions, and it was down relentlessly in the 2 or 3 weeks before that. So the turning point was back in the very beginning of August, which is when rumors started to circulate that some of the biggest national producers might finally be ready to agree to a production freeze. Now, in a way, it's remarkable traders are willing to trade the possibility of a freeze at all, because this is the third time these rumors have come through the market. Producers do get together, they do talk, and then they leave with no resolution. But this time, word is, it actually has a chance of sticking. We have seen the last 2 weeks oil inventories rising in the U.S. and Europe and in Asia. And nevertheless, another 0.5% gain in crude prices here in the U.S.
0.5%, by coincidence, that's a pretty similar figure to the downward movement on the stock market this week. What has been going on in what looks like an almost flatline environment?
It is almost a flatline, and I think there's a couple of forces at work. One of them is quiet on the global front. The relentless barrage of stories about potential Brexit risks and banks with balance sheet problems and China struggling to reignite its economy, which really have plagued us for months, have quieted down. On the other side of things, here in the U.S., Fed officials are starting to make noise about, hey, in this quiet, maybe we can raise interest rates. And I think it is the two things that are sort of batting prices up and down, but essentially unchanged over the 5 days.
Chris Lowe of FTN Financial, our thanks to him, speaking from New York. If you live in a city, is it a place that comes alive at night, or do the shutters come down early? Here in London, starting right now, 2 years after it was first announced, parts of the Underground Network are running all night. Mind you, London has a bit of catching up to do. Mirek Milan is the night mayor, no really, the night mayor of Amsterdam.
It's a moment in time for London, and of course it's great for the nighttime economy, but also it's really comforting for the people that work during the night. In the present day and time, people use the night in a different way, and when there's a lot of people dancing, there's also a lot of people working. So I think we should treat the night equally as we treat the day. Cities nowadays cannot only focus on one industry anymore. So cities in Europe like Berlin, Amsterdam and London, of course, are really competitive. But I think what is important is that we're having a vibrant nightlife means that you have an attractive city, and an attractive city will attract young creative people, and they will be followed by the creative industry. And everybody knows that creative industry is an engine for economic growth nowadays.
So will it catch on in London? Very likely, according to these late night tube travellers, some of whom may have been sober.
It's going to be amazing, like everybody's going to have a bit more relaxing time, so rather than like drink, and then we've got to catch the last train.
It's good to make your life more flexible, maybe consider a taxi for safety reasons.
I don't feel scared in London at all. I think it's going to be very safe. They can manage it during the day, so they can manage it during the night as well.
I am more than happy, and I think it's time that this happened, because it really will help a lot of people.
As long as it's safe, that it doesn't, you know, go into 3 o'clock in the morning, people fighting on the tubes and stuff, then it'll be all right.
Here's another advocate, Alan Miller of the Nighttime Industries Association.
We represent several hundred organisations, including street food festivals, bars, nightclubs, live music festivals, and we champion the benefits of nightlife across the UK.
I was hoping you were going to say sex and drugs and rock and roll, but food obviously is important.
Food is very important, and the street food phenomenon, particularly in our restaurants and our pop-ups and the whole ecosystem, the repertoire of different opportunities that has become so exceptional in Britain, has helped reshape our landscape in the city centres has been very important, and people are as passionate about their food and how they tweet and Instagram about them as they are about drinking and dancing and going out and all of that.
So what you're suggesting is there is a cultural advantage to being open all hours.
There's a really huge cultural advantage. In fact, it goes to the heart of who we are. To reminisce on that terrible moment at the Bataclan some time ago when we said we wouldn't allow those dreadful nihilists to exterminate our way of life. You know, we go out, we dance, we socialise, we drink, and we fall in love. On the dance floor and in the restaurants, that's where we get inspired. You know, to imagine London Fashion Week without the dance floor is incomprehensible. In the post-war period, all of our cultural assets, from Adele to Tiny Templar and even way back to the Beatles, they're all shaped and garnered on the dance floor and in our nightlife and our cultural contribution. But also economically, $66 billion per annum in the UK, over 300 million visits after 8 p.m. And now it's very exciting that we've got the night tube as well to enhance that, hopefully.
Should it be geographically restricted? Should there be some places that are able to have an early night?
I've got a son, and when I'm in Nassau and other places, I sometimes find myself asking people in the hotel to turn it down a little bit because I, like everybody else, want to get a good night's sleep. But that's the point about sound urban planning, about thinking about how nightlife and daytime work alongside one another. In Amsterdam, they've done the smart move of having 24-hour cultural quarters where people cycle out for an hour or so, and then they can have 24-hour nightclubs and residences and bars and activities, and we can shape and galvanise the kind of urban landscape that we want if we all work together, you know.
Is there a role model that London could look to?
New York and Hong Kong, much of Asia has those great night street food festivals. Berlin has a very commonsensical approach to everything from drugs and harm reduction to people having a safe night out. Barcelona and France, in Paris, you can have a baguette and a red wine at 6 a.m. There are some challenges in certain places, but in the most part, we can seize on the best assets, and we work with different groups, the nighttime mayor of Amsterdam, Murat Milan, Lutz Leisingring in Berlin, friends of ours in Mumbai and Tokyo, taking the best practice and best policies and limiting the costs to the activity.
Thank you for downloading from the BBC World Service. You can find a whole world of information from science, art, business and technology. Just go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.